Today is Wednesday. It's November 9th, 2022, and it's 2:40 in the afternoon. That date and that time kind of matters. This is going to be a very time-sensitive podcast. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals podcast, portions of which are broadcast on WGN Radio on Saturday nights when our schedule allows. You can hear me weekdays on WGN Radio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Hey, it's John Hansen of WGN Radio, Block Club Chicago, and WCIU-TV.
This is Mark Jacob. I'm a former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune, former Sunday editor at the Sun-Times, and just a plain old freelance writer now.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the very relieved former columnist from the Tribune who now publishes the Picayune Sentinel on Substack.
The election was yesterday, the midterm. Let's all do 15 seconds. What are you thinking and saying? Eric, go.
Well, I'm really relieved at the results. I was anticipating a red wave like a lot of people were. I was afraid of it, and I think we saw like a red ripple, if anything. And so it was a real repudiation of Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, I think it's just, you know, the resistance to fascism movement has it gets to fight another day. And I think it really exposed the news media's over-reliance on polls and boredom with the issues.
Boredom with the issues. We'll get to that. Where are you, John?
The end of MAGA as a legitimate winning political movement, and perhaps the saving of election results in 2024. Looking ahead, that made any sense?
Yeah, that didn't make much. What are you saying?
Yeah. Well, you see, and we'll dive in deeper, of course, but you see in a lot of states, secretaries of states that were very much election deniers, whether you're talking about Michigan, talking about, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, or, you know, Pennsylvania, even George Kemp, the secretary of state, obviously down in Georgia. You have a lot of wins for people that believe the results of an election, and whether they're Republican or Democrat, I think that bodes well in battleground states for 2024. Not that I want to look already in 2024, so file that away.
I think democracy did not die on Tuesday. So many smart and smug people were telling us it doesn't matter, and America, as we know it, is doomed, and I think democracy took a punch, but it is still standing. Even the comically cynical, or would you say cynically comical, Neil Steinberg in the Sun-Times today quoted Martin Luther King Jr., who said the arc of history is long and bends toward justice, even if it's taking its sweet time about it, he said. It was a really good piece if you didn't read what he said. But after the midterm election, Illinois remains solidly blue. And I don't even think that's necessarily a great thing. And as Eric said, the big red wave never came. And Eric, before we started this podcast, I said that's why I think everybody has reason to be happy and reason to be discouraged. You kind of took exception to that thought?
I did a little bit. If you look at what the fundamentals were going into this election, first of all, on these off-year elections, the party in power, the party that holds the White House, traditionally loses quite a few seats. We had polling showing that 72% of the voters think the country's on the wrong track. There was a commenter on Fox News, Mark Thiessen, who is a former speechwriter for President George W. Bush, and he was talking. He was saying, you know, we have this, basically saying we have inflation, we have real wages collapsing, we have this crime wave, we have a border crisis, we have an unpopular president, and then he says that the fact that Republican voters or voters looked at this and said no thanks to the Republican alternative. And he said the Republican Party needs to do really deep introspection, look in the mirror, because he said last night was an absolute disaster. And I think that for Republican expectations being so high, you have to admit that this was a huge disappointment for them. On the other hand, I would say that Democrats, the Republican Party being as crazy as it is these days, I mean, they nominated Herschel Walker and Mehmet Oz and these completely nutty candidates, and they still won the House. They're going to be in charge of the House of Representatives, even though the party has gone absolutely around the bend. In my view, the Democrats were not able to beat them on that. So there's a little something for the Democrats to be to have some soul searching about as well.
Well, I think that's making my point, although I didn't anticipate, but I think it's interesting what you said, Mark, that is the polling and our reliance on them. Did you call the press lazy when you talked about that?
It's lazy or it's just habitual. But But you look at, you know, this whole thing of, well, there was a big surprise and the voters defied expectations. Well, whose expectations were those? Those were the news media's largely, and based on polling that was all over the place and that they used to construct a narrative because they'd much rather, you know, do storytelling than do public service. And I was just disappointed. Now that I'm out of the news media, I can, you know, go ahead and slam it. I realize that it's a lot easier that way. But really, just look at it. I mean, how much did we talk about the issues? How much did we talk about insulin price caps? We didn't talk about that. We were talking about, well, it looks like the Republicans are gaining. Oh, no, well, now it looks like the Republicans are losing. Now it looks like they're gaining again. Now it looks like they're losing. Because they need a storyline, or at least they think they need a storyline, in order to hold on to viewers. It's just really disappointing. It's not public service. It's not informing the voters so that they make smart decisions.
It seems to me that the polling missed the importance of some of these issues that seem to be fading, such as reproductive rights. I guess, you know, I'll have to wait and see exactly what all the exit polls are showing us, but it looks to me like there were energized Democratic voters who were more concerned about their rights, more concerned about these threats to democracy, these threats to voting rights, mm-hmm. who came out and supported Democratic candidates because of that, and they weren't quite as worried about the price of gas. Because they know, maybe they know, that the price of gas goes up and down. The president doesn't have a whole lot to do with that. And they know that Republicans don't have a particularly robust plan to deal with inflation anyway. So perhaps those sort of things. And same thing with crime. It's like the Republican plan to deal with crime is unclear to me.
Eric, but the crime issue worked some places, clearly. And I was up in Wisconsin the last couple of days, and those commercials that Ron Johnson's fans were running against, against Mandela Barnes, they're just unconscionable. Just really this kind of using the crime issue as a subtext, as a pretext, so that you can kind of raise racial concerns. I viewed the ads as racist and really disappointing that they worked. You know, that's the thing about, you know, Citizens United and everything else, is that rich people can just relentlessly put TV ads on and bring down somebody's, you know, positive ratings and make a difference. And that race was so close that I'm convinced that that's what made a difference, was the rich buddies that Ron Johnson gave tax breaks to, special tax breaks to, a few years ago, doing him a solid by just slamming his opponent.
I will say, though, that soft and hard money was spent much more on by the Democrats' side. They outspent Republicans on hard money, whether that's small donors or up to the 2,900 cap. And even soft money was much more in favor. PACs funded by Democrats were much more powerful. In fact, some people have started to make the argument that Democrats have actually benefited more from Citizens United over the last 10 years than Republicans have. Yes, 7 out of the 10 biggest donors are Republicans, but when you add up the total cost of what is spent in election these days, it's often Democrats with the hard and soft money spending more money.
Yeah, but who wants to eliminate that? I do.
All right.
But and so do Democrats mostly. I mean, yeah. So the fact that they haven't unilaterally disarmed is not really an argument for this being a great idea. Same thing with gerrymandering. You know, in Illinois, clearly the Democrats have gerrymandered to their benefit. You know, it's really clear in the congressional races, man, this time. And overall, the Democrats want to get to a better system. The Republicans don't. They want to game the system. And that's I think, is a big difference. But you can't really expect the Democrats to not gerrymander and to not spend, that kind of, money. So they can't unilaterally disarm.
I think the analysis of polling was out of whack and was irresponsible. I agree with Mark on that.
Yeah.
But when you look state by state at polling averages for nearly every Senate race and the congressional generic ballot, they are all within the margin of error. So we often love to say the polls were wrong, but it's often the analysis of the polls that is the wrong thing. That in very many states, Pennsylvania, Arizona, it'll look like Nevada, it'll look like North Carolina, Wisconsin, and the generic, but they're all within the 2 or 3 point margin of error when you average them all together. So polls still remain fairly accurate. You'll find outliers, but the average of polls is still pretty steady And true, it's the analysis, I think, that Mark was getting at that is wrong.
I totally agree with you, John. But the thing about it is if you're saying, well, it's in within the margin of error, so it doesn't mean anything, then TV can't talk about it. You know, then they have to ignore the fact that you just raised and kind of create and use these swings to their advantage to create this kind of drama that otherwise doesn't exist. And there's just there's a really smart NYU professor, Jay Rosen, who writes about media a lot. He's pointed out that the Washington news media is just obsessed with what he calls the savvy style, which means they got to be smarter than anyone else. And so they've got, instead of just waiting for the people to vote and describing what the issues they're voting on, they have to know it before it happens. They have to, you know, and it's bad for our democracy. It just is. I think the news media was just about as bad as it's ever been during this election cycle.
Do you think, though, that it may have inspired some Democrats to come out and vote because they were really alarmed by some of the commentary that they heard and some of the threats like, you know, our democracy is going down the tubes. If we lose this election the way we think we're going to, the Democrats, then people are never going to be able to vote again. They're never going to be able to relinquish. The Republicans are never going to be able to relinquish power.
I think that's a clever thing that, like, people say, right? Oh, that really motivated. But also, if your side looks like you're winning, that can sometimes be a motivational factor, too. People rally around a close win just as much as they do around a deficit. And people that are really paying attention to the ups and downs of polls, probably we're already going to vote already. So I think it is a fun storyline people use afterwards, but it doesn't really bear out in the data that people made a decision to vote because of what the polling was showing.
Well, let's just talk about the Illinois ticket for a minute here. J.B. Pritzker, as I sit here now, I don't think these numbers are going to change, over Darren Bailey, about 54-43%. J.B. won by about 11.5 percentage points. Eric, my son asked me a couple days before the election how I thought it was going to go, and I said, I think JB wins by 8. It's going to be close. Long time ago, you said 18. It was about 11.5. How do you interpret that margin? Is that a lot? Is that a little?
By most standards, that's a landslide. I mean, it's, you know, basically, yeah, I mean, 54-43 is a landslide in American politics. And you saw that up and down the ballot for the Democrats. They were winning just about every race by about that. You know, Kwame Raoul won 54-44, and Susana Mendoza won 57-41, and Alexei Janulius won 54-44. So those are our baked-in base voters. I mean, one of the things that's really sort of striking is that in the Attorney General race, Thomas DeVore, who was, I think, easily the nuttiest and least likely of the Republican statewide constitutional officer candidates for the Republicans, he got 44% of the vote. I mean, that shows you that's a party that's lost its way. I mean, yeah. DeVore was, I can't say it any other way. DeVore was just completely unqualified, completely unsuited for that office. And he got 44%. He got 43.7% of the vote. That's a percentage point better than Darren Bailey. How do you explain that? And Darren Bailey was a kook, too. So, I feel like the party has lost its way. The party, the Republican Party in Illinois is right where it was before. I think they picked up one or two seats in the Senate, and I think they lost a couple of seats in the House. That both chambers now still have super majorities. We have Democrats won every statewide constitutional office. Democrats now will have a 5-2 advantage on the Illinois Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And they won all the U.S. congressional races.
It's 14-3. We're 14 blue, 3 red in Illinois.
It's just phenomenal. How strong the Democratic Party is and how weak and weird the Republican Party is in Illinois.
I do find it interesting that what ran higher than all of the offices you pointed out was the Workers' Rights Amendment, meaning you have a sliver of the population that voted for Darren Bailey and voted yes on that. And I think we can probably take some educated guesses on union workers that maybe would have done that. I just find that fascinating that people would vote yes for that amendment, but against people who espouse the policies of being pro-union. I thought that was interesting.
I'm not sure the smartest people in the room voted on that Amendment 1 issue. I still don't think, in retrospect, we said this before, but if that passes, as we sit here now, it's not clear how that's finally going to shake out. It's on the margin for both ways for it to pass, the 50 and 60% thresholds. It looks like it will, but maybe it won't. But it was a sufficiently complicated thing, what the repercussions are of that. I'll put myself in the group of people who maybe don't fully understand the ramifications of this and shouldn't have been voting on it. But you say, hey, are you for workers' rights? And people go, yeah, I'm for workers' rights. We're in. And I don't know that we know what we just did there.
I think a lot of people vote on things they don't understand. I would like to see more people skip races. I mean, I think the voters, and when you go to the polling place, you see that there's almost this encouragement. Well, you made a mistake. You didn't vote for everything, you know, and they shouldn't be that way. They should be. I understand that they're trying to remind people in case they just missed something they want to vote for. But I think people should be encouraged to skip races. I mean, I don't vote for like Metropolitan Water Reclamation Board most of the time because I don't really know the candidates running it. I haven't taken the time to figure it out. So,
well, in those cases, you're just supposed to vote for the people with Irish names, I think.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I do think that, you know, getting onto the attorney general race that Eric was mentioning, I think so many people in this country who are real kind of party, you know, real partisans, They don't care about the person. They're just looking at the D or the R after their name. I mean, and you see that with the Herschel Walker thing. I mean, I don't know that you couldn't invent a candidate worse than Herschel Walker. I mean, that it's just a train wreck of a candidacy. Yet the guy is in a runoff. He's going to be in a runoff to become a United States Senator. And if he won, it would be, I mean, it'd be, you could have a comedy series about what he's going to do in the Senate. It's an embarrassment. And why would anyone vote for that guy? I mean, just on pure character issues or honesty issues or any other decency issues. But they do vote for him. And I've seen interviews with people say, well, I don't care about that. I just want the Republicans to have the majority in the Senate. So all the R's, they're voting for the R. They're not voting for Herschel Walker. But that's dangerous. That's how you get people in office who are clearly not qualified to be there.
But you do understand the logic of that. When the House is 50 to 50, you do want a button pusher. I mean, I don't expect him to sponsor legislation or come up with great ideas. But
he'll find his way to the men's room. I mean, come on.
But he'll be a solid Republican vote, and that's what – listen, put it this way. Suppose the spread in the Congress, in the Senate was 60-30. Do you think he wins then? Probably not, but it was so close they couldn't gamble on giving up that seat. Listen, I'm stunned by Herschel Walker's candidacy as well. I'm just trying to figure it out, and that's the only rationale I can come up
with. Well, the thing that's puzzling is not so much that people voted for him in this general election, because, you know, as we've pointed out, he's a button pusher. He's wearing the red jersey. That's all that matters to a ton of voters, clearly, that you know, he is unfit. But if character, honesty, and decency mattered to the Republican Party, then they wouldn't have elected Donald Trump as president. So it's clear that it doesn't matter to them, and it's all about who's going to vote for the policies that they want. But it's puzzling to me that you would choose Herschel Walker over some more plausible Senate candidates in the primary.
Well,
that's the weird thing about the primary.
Right. And that he was, you know, endorsed by Trump and all that. But Eric, you know, you talk about kind of vote for the policies they want. It's not even that, I don't think. I think what the whole MAGA mentality has turned into is punish the enemies, not help yourself. I mean, come on, let's think about it. How do you crawl into the mind of a voter who's voting for Jim Jordan and thinks Jim Jordan is going to help make their life better? I mean, really, obviously he's not. He's just trying to, you know, mouth off and be combative. And it's so the really sad thing about it is that this taps into this kind of resentment in American life right now, where people just want to punish the enemy, punish the other. They don't really expect politicians to help make their lives better. And that's really sad and disappointing.
Marjorie Taylor Greene won, too, you know, to that point.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, she was going to win. I mean, there was no question about that. But Boebert probably lost, right?
Yeah, right. That's what it looks like as we sit here today. And Mary Miller, our own version of that, won by 43 points in Central and Northwest Illinois. So she's one of the three Republicans from our congressional delegation in Illinois Evanston voted to use ranked choice voting in their next city elections, which will be interesting. And as we, I think, made the point before the podcast started that if they'd had that in Georgia, we would know today who the senator would be from that state. And it was over 80% of the people in Evanston voted for that.
Including me.
Oh, yeah. You voted in Evanston, huh?
I'm an Evanston resident, and I did. And I mean, I think, number one, it makes you do have one election instead of two. Saves money. But it also, I think that it meant, just as far as mentality of voters, sometimes I think it would encourage you to vote for a candidate who you thought probably didn't have a great chance of getting elected, but who you thought was the best candidate. And by picking that candidate, it doesn't kind of take you out of really choosing who might get elected. I mean, it still lets you get it, you know, stay in the, you know, in the game, even if that person doesn't do well. So I think it's sophisticated. I think it's a sophisticated voting system in which people can grade different candidates based on who, you know, from best to worst, instead of all or none.
I think it's part of the formula to saving, quote unquote, democracy moving forward by softening the primary process so that 32% of a vote from the person that riles up the base the most is not necessarily the winner. And it's gaining steam in big situations. I mean, Alaska is ranked choice voting and likely going to elect Lisa Murkowski, a Republican conservative, and very likely going to elect for a full term a Democrat out of the House, beating Sarah Palin, who came in second. And then the other Republicans' votes will go split up. It looks like she'll lose, as she did in the special election. So a Democrat out of Alaska wins with Lisa Murkowski. And then Maine has ranked choice voting as well. And Nevada voted yesterday to go for ranked choice voting. Now, it's a quirky process. They have to do it for a third year in a row next year for it to become part of their state constitution. I know I'm getting in the weeds here, but what I'm saying is that ranked choice voting is really picking up steam, and anything we can do to reform the primary process, especially, is going to help both parties out and help people elect way more calming, moderate voices.
Well, and there is talk, there's thought that what the ranked choice voting does is it discourages candidates from attacking one another quite so viciously and from staking out these extreme positions, because you want to be, if you're not the first choice, somebody, you want to be their second choice. And so you don't want to be a nasty person or seen as a real attack dog, because you want to attract those voters in the middle who may not be so sure about you, but they'll make you their second choice. I don't know how true that's proven to be in real world tests, but it makes sense to me that it would have a moderating effect on politics and moderating effect on government. And as someone who considers himself somewhat moderate, although I know I come on sometimes as very strong left, I do have some more moderate views, and I feel like our politics needs to get back to where it was, where you would have some liberal Republicans and you would have some more conservative Democrats, and they weren't all just putting on their blue shirts and their red shirts and voting in lockstep. I do have a question. I'm wondering whether this close vote, we're talking about the U.S. House now, and it looks like the Republicans are going to have what, maybe about a 5-seat majority, like the
5 to 10.
5 to 10 seats. So it's going to be really close. So is it likely that they're going to do this, you know, this impeachapalooza, that we're going to impeach Biden for Afghanistan and impeach him for the border and impeach him for Hunter Biden? And there were some threats like that. I think that the lesson coming out of this whole election for the Republican Party is that crazy is not selling anymore.
I was thinking of the same thing this morning. I was thinking that if they do go to that, you know, constant Hunter Biden investigations and just investigate everything, that the American public is going to get sick of it. American public is going to be saying, what are you doing to help us? You know, how does this give us health care? And it ultimately, I mean, unfortunately, grandstanding has worked lately. But I do think that they're going to get tired of it. And it's just, to me, it will, if they do that, and they might, you know, because with that kind of slim Republican majority, Kevin McCarthy or whoever becomes House Speaker is going to be pressured by the more radical Matt Gaetz, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene types. So he may have to go that route. But that route is going to accentuate the idea, which is a fact, that Republicans don't really have plans to fix anything. They're a grievance party.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think everyone is, and I even said here at the top of the podcast, kind of spelling the doom of the legitimate MAGA movement. And I think that, and I think a lot of Republican strategists think that. And of course, you have Ron DeSantis winning by 20 points in what was used to be a purple state. It's a red state now, but that's a huge win. It's a huge night for him. But in the middle of all this, before we get a Georgia runoff, we're likely to get an announcement from Donald Trump that he's going to run for president. So we're going to get a real test quickly on the backbone of Republicans after this red ripple, if it ends up even being that soon, because you're going to have to start seeing Republicans taking stands. And I think their instincts are going to tell them, we do not want to be the party of Trump anymore. It is a party that has lost a lot of things. Easier said than done, though, when actually faced with that. And it's coming soon.
How do you think he's going to moderate his message, guys? Mark, you might respond to this, John, too. But you would imagine that Trump's not going to back down. He never backs down. But then he's got to see what has happened today or yesterday. So how does he modify his message, or does he?
Oh, I don't think he does. I mean, I feel like, and the question I was curious what John thought, and Eric, and you, is will Trump get in this position if he does announce for president? Will he pressure Republicans to take a stand right away? Because the reason that Trump is where he is now as far as dominating the Republican Party is because he threatens everyone, because they know that just with one, you know, tweet or whatever or announcement, he can doom a candidate. And will he use the fact that he scared the entire party, will he use that to pressure people to take a stand on him versus DeSantis?
Does the fact that so many of his candidates lost, Dr. Oz and up and down the ticket, so many of the people that he got behind lost, and the fact that Ron DeSantis, he was insulting Ron DeSantis, 2 weeks ago, calling him
De-sanctimonious.
He's clearly threatened by him. But DeSantis won big last night. DeSantis had a huge night, and Trump had a lousy night. And do Republicans up and down or across the country, are they looking at this and going, like, how powerful is this guy? How difficult is it to challenge him? DeSantis has not bought into the election lie, as far as I know. He's stayed away from that, and he may be charting a different path, and he may think that Trump is vulnerable enough that he's actually going to challenge him in the primaries, and he might win. He might be able to beat Trump, because I do think there are – I mean, I've certainly talked to people who are Republicans who voted for Trump both times, but with their nose clenched between thumb and forefinger, because they are they just don't want to vote for a Democrat. But when they're given a choice in a primary between someone who seems kind of like a winner and Trump, who's been dragging the party down, I'm thinking they might make that decision. I don't know. It's so hard to read the Republican electorate, because they did nominate Tom DeVore for attorney general. So.
We've heard, yeah.
We have litmus tests in these states where governor candidates were the Senate and the governor candidate were chosen by different, you know, parts of the party, right? You have Mike DeWine, and that election in Ohio, the governor was called like that. He won by 30 points. J.D. Vance wins by 8. In Georgia, you have Brian Kemp, more traditional, not a Trump candidate, wins by 8 points, and you have a slim lead for a Warnock, an 8-point bump there. You're seeing it all over the place. Even Oz, who lost, did a lot better than Mastriano, and Oz obviously was more of a Trump candidate, but was picked by Trump, but Mastriano was a election-denying Trump thumper. So what Republicans should be thinking about, I'm sure they are in the establishment, that you get 7 to 8 points better in a general election with a more quote-unquote normal Republican.
Right, and Trump has lost the popular vote 2 straight times. So it's not like he's like, you know, some big juggernaut. But I do feel like that DeSantis is going to have his own problem. He's going to have the problem of, unlike Trump, DeSantis is kind of a evangelical or religious theocratic kind of candidate. I mean, he's into kind of this kind of religious, our way or the highway kind of thing. And I wonder if that will scare off voters in a different way.
Oh, I think it will. And in fact, he's not particularly charismatic either. I mean, Trump, for all his flaws, he does have a certain charisma that clearly attracts voters and excites them. I don't think that DeSantis has that on the national stage. Although it's hard to argue with a 20-point victory over Charlie Crist, who's a former governor in Florida and was a fairly popular former governor. And that was a very impressive butt-kicking last night.
That's in Florida. Do you think that DeSantis resonates in Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio? I mean, he doesn't have the charisma that he did well in Florida, I think, is a reflection of Florida politics.
I don't know. I mean, you might see candidate. I mean, if Carrie Lake wins in Arizona, you might see her running. You might see Nikki Haley running in the Republican Party.
Well, that's how Trump wins. If those people are all running, what the Republican establishment needs to do quickly, if they really want to do it, and they're trying, a lot of the media outlets are trying to push DeSantis as the other option because they don't have ranked choice voting in Republican primaries. And if you get that cast of characters, then Donald Trump's your nominee again.
Let's just click through a couple of other states here. In Wisconsin, incumbent Ron Johnson won. I guess we've commented a little bit on that. Are you holding hope that Barnes would be able to eke that one out?
I think Barnes did really good, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought that it was going to be tough to beat Johnson, especially with a black candidate in a majority white state like that's very conservative in some parts of it. I thought Barnes showed well. I didn't expect him to win. The thing that's so disappointing about this is that Johnson is just such a terrible candidate and such a terrible senator. I mean, the guy said that mouthwash cured COVID. I mean, he says stuff like that. You know, he's clearly wants to cut Social Security and Medicare. You would think that some of those kind of issues would cut through the voters, but they didn't. It was a whole kind of cultural, you know, red versus blue thing. So I think that one thing that is significant is that Evers won.
Who were the Evers Johnson voters? Because there had to be a bunch of them.
Well, let's just say they were white.
Also, I mean, it brings up a great point, is this split vote. There is a chance that there was a large part of electorate across this country that simply did not love any candidates. And that's when you often get split choice, where people go, I'm going to even this thing out. You have the governor, you have Evers winning about 3 points better than you have Mandela Barnes. You have Mastriano doing so many points. And I mentioned George and some of the other ones, too. That's often a byproduct of no one being truly happy with the direction of the party or the direction of anything at that point. That's where you get a lot of split choice voters. Evers was polling about 2 to 3 points ahead of Mandela Barnes the whole time. So I'm going to check that off as another polling win. I don't know why I'm defending polls so much today, but
no, I mean, they were right in some cases, but the thing is they were all over the place. So they couldn't have all been right.
You know, when you mentioned insulin prices and things like that, I don't remember the graphic on TV that showed two candidates and what their position was on something as granular as that. Even gas prices or the economy or Afghanistan, Ukraine, any of those things. I don't remember seeing a side-by-side on where they stood on those issues. Sometimes because maybe they didn't volunteer it or they were so nebulous about it, it would be hard to put it on a graphic. But wow, would have that have been a helpful tool for me as a voter.
Right. But the news media thought that was boring. They thought that was boring and would not keep viewers and readers. And so they didn't do it. And it's not something as granular as insulin price caps. It's the Affordable Care Act and whether it should survive. I mean, there are plenty of ways that you could have delineated differences between the candidates if you would have wanted to. That's why I'm saying that this was a gigantic fail by the news media. And one of the big losers in, you know, campaign 2022 was the news media.
Do you think it's good that you don't have all three branches of the same party?
In normal times, yes. In a time when one of the major political parties has taken a giant right turn into fascism, no. And so I just think that the whole circumstances are different. And the fact that the Republican Party does not believe in free and fair elections and doesn't believe that an election is fair unless they win it and all kinds of other stuff. I mean, it's just... So, I mean, in normal times, if you asked me the same question 40 years ago, I would have said yes.
40? How about 10? Eric, you and I were talking about this on the radio the other day, and I said that I don't think that the people that are voting for election deniers or Republicans or Trump wannabes aspire for fascism. They don't want an authoritarian type government, but they've just picked a team, and it happens to be those sorts of creatures that are at the forefront right now. This is where I get hopeful about democracy or the intelligence of American voters, such as it is. And again, I'm not saying I'm a super smart voter because I vote the way I do, but I'm just thinking nobody wants to live under an autocrat. And as long as we have the Constitution to safeguard us against their reign, then I'm hopeful.
You can be hopeful, but when you poll people about this kind of thing, you find that people would, they don't mind the idea of strong man leadership, strong person leadership. In a lot of cases, you say there's nobody who wants this. I think there are actually quite a few people who would rather have their person in charge, and they don't care about any of the rules. They would gladly see any of the rules broken if the person who espouses their views is in power. And you see that? That's how authoritarianism gets going.
Well, sure it is, but I don't – really, you think that's a lot of people?
I do.
Yes.
I do think it's
I think it's a lot of people. I think clearly, I mean, you've created the Republican Party has created this mentality of the other, you know, that you know, immigrants and are going to, you know, brown skinned people
okay.
from other countries are going to come get you.
Sure.
And when they do that, they create this situation where if you vote for the strong man, the autocrat, then you will be safe. That's what they create.
But their lives won't be that much better or better at all.
No, of course not. Okay, well, they don't know that. That's
okay.
why it's a con game.
But then it comes out in the wash, right? Then it comes out in the wash.
What wash? What are you talking about?
4 years later, 2 years, 6 years later, you go, wait a minute. Inflation.
If there is a free election.
John,
I'm telling you, we're at a state and time where we're one election away from losing everything.
And what does that mean? No, really, what does that mean? So how do we lose? Free and fair elections.
Okay, here's how we lose free and fair elections. Let's say that the Republicans win everything in 2024. They just declare that we won't have any more elections, or we'll have elections, but we will exclude certain people from
the
ballot.
And you think that enough people would put up with that? They would say, hooray, my team won.
John, they attacked the Capitol. You put fake electors in. Those people are still walking around free.
And
they
are. I'd say they're.
I don't understand why you think that this couldn't happen, that it all couldn't end really quickly, because it almost did last time.
Sorry, Margaret, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I mean, my rant, if you're going to interrupt my rant. I'm just saying that it's wrong. Everyone thought, I was reading The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by William Shirer the other day, and there's a German politician who says, well, now that we brought Hitler into the government, we can control him. It would be no problem. He was made chancellor 2 weeks later. It was all over. This idea that no problem, everything's fine, that there are safeguards. I mean, the Supreme Court isn't going to protect us. You know, that got Mitch McConnell cheated people onto the Supreme Court.
I got to stop you. I have to interject on the Supreme Court thing, because the guardrail in 2020 was the federal court, and the Supreme Court didn't even take up the cases that the attorney general's before us. And yes, it's changed one tick over now with a 6-3 majority. I agree with the idea that free and fair elections can be challenged, but I find the process to be slower than just Republicans saying, well, we're not doing this anymore. I think it's if you get a secretary of state who won't certify a vote,
exactly.
A state legislature, and it's down to one state, which we've seen happen before, and that state legislator sends an alternate slate of electors. And by the way, there's a case in front of the Supreme Court soon about can they do that, and there you go. But the outrage, I think people really underestimate the outrage that a state would feel if they had their votes taken away from them and what could happen there. And I agree that sometimes we are just one election away from democracy, but I think we ticked the clock. If this was like the atomic clock where you're 3 minutes to midnight, I think last night we moved it to a quarter to midnight.
The doomsday clock is now 1 minute in the other direction, maybe 1 second in the other
direction. For me. I agree with that. It wasn't disaster time. I'm just saying that that being complacent is a big mistake right now, because the same people who plotted to overthrow a fair election last time are still walking around, and they're planning to do it again.
I know that, and I'm sorry that my thoughts sound complacent to you, because I don't think I am that at all. If I said I'm a little optimistic, I hope that doesn't sound ill-informed. I mean, I'm following these stories too, but I just think it borders on the fantastical to think that we would have some sort of irrevocable dictator in this country running things, or that rights would just be cast aside.
Yeah, but John, 3 years ago, would you have expected a mob to attack the U.S. Capitol? Would you have expected that? Would you have predicted that?
No, I wouldn't have predicted that. But I mean, all right. But what is the? All right. So go ahead. What is your point? What is
your point? My point is that is that horrible things can happen, and if you just assume they won't, just because they haven't happened in the past, all I'm saying is that the people who are against our democracy have made it abundantly clear that they want to take down our
democracy.
The
people that climbed up on the Capitol are going to jail, too, some of them. No, you don't think so. You don't think that...
I think that Donald Trump ought to go to jail. That's who ought to go to jail.
Sure, I do, too.
He's running for president. And Mitch McConnell made it certain that we couldn't even exclude him from running for president. Mitch McConnell, in two impeachment trials, could have, just with a one word, have made it so that Trump could never run for public office again.
Mark, I agree with that point, right? Because they could have voted to impeach and then voted to say he can never run again.
Exactly.
But I am a Mitch McConnell defender of the idea that he held up democracy in some really perilous moments. I know that people say, well, he shouldn't get extra credit for that because he was just doing that. I feel the same way about Mike Pence. I think there are some Republicans who stood in the fray, Brad Raffensperger, Brian Kemp.
Wait a second. Mike Pence knew there was a plot to overthrow democracy and didn't tell the public, didn't tell the FBI, as far as I know. He just didn't participate in it. I don't think that makes him a hero.
Maybe hero is too strong a word, but in a moment where you could envision a party that had been so swept up by him and he owed Donald Trump his position as vice president, I think a weaker person might have tried to mess that up even more. And Mitch McConnell stood on the floor of the Senate before the January 6th and said him certifying the election was the most important vote he'd ever take. There's a lot against Mitch McConnell that people can argue about, of course. I find fault in what he did in the impeachment trials, but I don't like blaming him, I guess you could say. Not that you necessarily were, but that's
no, right. No, I am saying that he's more, enabled Trump than not.
And I think there's a little something in John, in your point of view, John Williams, that it can't happen here because America is not susceptible to the laws of political gravity and social change that so many other countries that have slid into authoritarianism have experienced. And I just don't think that's true. I don't think that American people are immune to the sorts of impulses and the sorts of degrading behavior that's happened throughout history. And so to protect that, protecting a democracy is not just like, oh, we got a constitution, we'll be fine. I do think that we can't get complacent about it. We have to continue to vote. We can't let state legislatures can decide unilaterally to overthrow or just change the results. Say, we think there's some irregularities here. We're going to give our electoral college votes to the Republican candidate because we think that the election, there's too many mail-in ballots or there's too many questions about vote counting. And so we're going to do that. You might be right. There might be an uprising, but it might be too late when you have an uprising and they go, okay, well, we'll put down the uprising. And these are the new rules that the Supreme Court may allow them to follow.
I agree with John more than you two, respectfully. I feel like I trust the American public to withstand something like that. And not only because maybe, we have it in us to withhold something like that, but it's also a very losing strategy. And it has been demonstrated last night. It is a losing strategy to whine and say that it was stolen from you. And it was proven to be a losing strategy for so many candidates that I feel like the desire to win will make that argument go away in the Republican Party.
Hmm. Well, I hope you're right,
John. You don't see anyone today challenging.
I noticed that.
No one's even Carrie Lake, who was a little crazy yesterday. She's waiting, but I think she also knows that the vote might go her way, and she doesn't want to soil it right now.
But if it doesn't, she's going
to. That's fair. She's the exception. But Mastriano, you have all these very election denying people all calling to concede their races, maybe a little later than we wanted. Tudor Dixon, who thought in Michigan that they all have called and conceded their elections. Now, you might also say it's because they weren't all that close and they don't have a ground to stand on. But I still believe that whining about a previous election is a losing strategy.
Just to be really clear, I'm not sure, because I don't think most people understand this. The Supreme Court is taking up a case that we'll get a ruling on next year that will determine whether state legislatures have the ability to change the electors for president from their state without any review by the courts. And if the Supreme Court rules that state legislatures can do that, then we've got a giant problem, and you would have like the state legislature of Wisconsin, you know, reversing what the people of that state chose. Mm-hmm. Then you have an illegitimate presidency, then you got a real problem. And so then you're counting on the people to get into the streets and have a giant uprising to prevent it from happening, because the law will be that they're allowed to do that. The official law, backed up by the military, will be that the state legislatures are allowed to change that. So that's an extremely dangerous case that people need to watch. And counting on, you know, thousands or millions of people to get into the street to do that, you know, I don't know, they might be busy, you know, watching Netflix or something. I would hate to think that that's what we're counting on as a backstop.
The irony is that the Republican Party is the one that waves the flag. They're the super patriots. They're the ones that are bedrock, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and all of those principles. And where I'm counting on that to sort of be our backstop here, they're, you're saying, willing to just throw that all out if it doesn't suit their purposes.
That ruling may be the most important ruling, you know, that's happened in our lifetimes.
This one that's coming up.
Yeah. And the arguments haven't taken place yet, so maybe more people will be aware of it when it happens. But that is scary stuff.
I'm playing it out of my head now, Mark. So I would imagine then the onus would be on the people that vote in individual states to not elect people who would endorse that in their states.
But in Wisconsin, it's a 50-50 state, and the state legislature is, you know, is over 60% Republican. Why is that? Because of gerrymandering. So they set up a system where that's just, you know, self-perpetuating that they're in charge. So let's say this ruling does happen next year. So in the 2024 election, let's say that the Democratic candidate wins in Wisconsin. The legislature says, no, we didn't like the way the election was handled. We're sending our own electors that are for the Republican candidate. And two or three other states do that. And then those electors go to Washington legitimately, according to the law, as the Supreme Court decided it. And they say, no, the will of the people wasn't protected. That's the scary thing. And what's the backstop there? It's not electing those Wisconsin people the next time. It's too late by that point. It's getting into the street. That would be the only alternative if that happened. I know you're not being complacent, but I'm saying that we are as close as we have been in our lifetimes to seeing it all go away.
Were you heartened at all by what happened yesterday, generally speaking?
Oh, well, yeah, there was good and bad stuff. And the thing, just to be really clear, I'm an independent. I'm not even a Democrat. I just am an anti-fascist. That's the deal with me. And so I thought in Michigan kind of turned from purple to blue. I mean, and they had a really crazy cast of Republicans who didn't believe in stuff like cohabitation as being legal. I mean, that's what Christine Caramo, the Secretary of State candidate, said. Who, you know, she believes in, you know, weird, like, satanic stuff going on in politics. So in Michigan, that was really positive. I think the fact that it didn't go that negatively was a positive thing. But what's going to happen with a Republican-run House? I mean, is it just going to be kind of a mess? Will they try to impeach Biden over crazy stuff? And if they do, that wouldn't get accepted in the Senate. But do they just? I mean, it could be just a circus. So, but yes, the House didn't fall in this time.
I had a question on a slightly different topic, which is: does anybody think that Pritzker's speech last night, his victory speech, was indicative of his desire to run for president? That he's been kind of denying it, and dancing around. But that speech was all national politics. It wasn't about making Illinois a better place, really. He was banging on about fighting Trump and MAGA.
Yeah.
I think he's, I think he's, uh, re- if Joe Biden decides he's not going to run, which I guess a lot of people hope that he's not going to, and I think I'm one of them. Is he going to jump in? Is Pritzker going to jump in?
Pritzker did not mention Darren Bailey by name. He did mention Donald Trump. It seemed to be very celebratory. Of course, it would be, but he sure didn't invite Republicans who voted for Darren Bailey into the tent. He seemed to be almost indifferent to it. I noticed that, too.
I got a little of that vibe, but I think it's such a moot question until we know if Joe Biden's going to run again. And in that note, I think a lot of these calls for him not to run again were quelled by last night's results.
Think that was an endorsement of Joe Biden or a repudiation of Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, actually, if you look at exit polls, a lot of voters said it was neither.
You think that Joe Biden would be a good candidate for Democrats in the next run?
If you're going against Donald Trump, why not get the guy that just beat him 2 years ago?
Wow.
4 years before.
Because he's going to be like 81.
Because he's not good.
It's a lot of the game that the SNL sketch did a couple weeks ago where the Democrat it was a parody of a horror film, and Democrats were like, oh, no, it's Joe Biden. We have to have him again. And then they go through all the other alternatives and they're like, OK, yeah, we'll stick with Joe. He's OK.
I don't have an alternative candidate.
Wait for anyone else.
But that's not my job. I'm just sitting here. And if you're asking me, do I think Joe Biden is dynamite? I say, no, I don't think he's dynamite at all.
Why?
I don't think he's inspirational. I don't think he brings new people into the next election, especially if he's not running against Donald Trump. And I would like to think that the whole of the Democrat Party could find somebody else on a national stage that is an interesting or dynamic player. Joe Biden is not that. Just give me that. Couldn't we find somebody more interesting, more...
Why does politics have to be interesting? Why can't it be the guy that was in the Senate for 36 years and just navigated a 50-50 Senate for 2 years to pass major legislation that hadn't been passed, and more movement in the Senate in any sort of legislation than there had been in, I don't know, a decade since the supermajority of Barack Obama?
Okay, well, you go door to door with that and tell me how that works for you.
I will vote for Joe Biden in a heartbeat. I worry that his age is going to be such an issue. He's going to be, I think, 81. Is that? I think I'm doing the math right there. He's going to be a pretty old man when he's running for president the next time around, if he runs.
He'll be eight years younger than Chuck Grassley, who just won a 6-year term as Senate.
Right, but he's just a senator. And the question
wow.
would be whether that's going to drag down turnout and enthusiasm. I mean, you hear like Barack Obama giving his speeches in Pennsylvania last week, and that guy's got so much fire and dynamism, and he's Biden does not have that anymore. And the only reason I would say I don't want him to run again is not because he hasn't been effective, I think, as president. Not that I think he's a bad president, but that I just feel like he would not be a winning candidate. That's the thing that I'd be afraid of.
Well,
that's it.
I think that's the point I'm trying to make, too. Yeah.
I think that 2 years feels really close, and obviously this thing's going to ramp up within the next 12 months. But in the political world, that is a lifetime. We have a lot to get to before we get to that. And the landscape of inflation and some other issues, gas prices could change completely one way or the other in the next 8 months before this decision has to get made.
John, you got to go. And I'm looking at the clock. I think I've taken a lot of your time, everybody. Is there any last thoughts, Eric or Mark, that you want to make sure we put into this podcast before we sign off?
I just want to say that people voting is a great thing. And a lot of people did, and the interest is high. And that's a great thing. I mean, you know, this idea that we still have a chance, that we still have a voice. I mean, I don't want to come across as negative, because I think that so many people voting is a good thing, even when 74 million of them are voting for a fascist president. I think that many people voting, you know, it's encouraging. It still gives us a chance.
Well, I just want to note that choice or reproductive rights or abortion was on the ballot in a number of states, and it seems to have done well in terms of defending women's right to choose, and even in states like Kentucky. So I was pleased to see that.
I thought that the abortion issue was sufficiently in the rearview mirror that it wasn't going to be a determining factor, but it appears that maybe that resonated a little bit. And John, last thought from you?
I love that two elections in a row we've had huge, huge voter turnout. I think that's great, just like what Mark was saying. And everything's going to change by the time people listen to this anyways. We don't know. I mean, the Democrats still could lose the Senate. So maybe this optimism that some people are feeling today is a little early in the making. But we'll wait and see.
And I'll close with this. If I ever decide to run for statewide office, I'm not going to campaign on Chicago as a hellhole. I think I've learned that lesson. Hey, Mark, what a pleasure. What a sobering and interesting contribution you made for us today. I'm glad you were able to give us some of your time.
Well, thanks. It was fun.
And John and Eric, nice to see you guys, too. We're produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another pod on you next week. Damn, boy, you were good today, Mark. Thank you for going at it, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry I get in a rant on that.
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't in the same room with you. I was starting to fear for my safety there, but I'm glad.
No, it's just that people throughout history have said, well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I know. No, you were good. I'm glad you said all of that, and I'm glad I wasn't in the same room as you. Okay, guys.
See you guys soon.
John, go do what you got to do. See you, boys.
Take care.
Bye now.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.